there's a theme with the life of Elisha. At this time, Israel is drawn away from God. And through the life of Elisha, and through the testimony of Elisha, God is showing His people Israel that they can come back to Him. He's showing the people of Israel that they can bring their cares, their burdens, all their problems back to God. Next week we'll be talking about how we can take our fears even to God, and how that God is concerned about the things that go on in our life. And He's concerned about the direction that Israel's taking. Instead of going to God with their problems, Israel as a whole is going to idols. They're going to false religions with their problems. They aren't coming to God. And it's the rare exception of people that come to Elisha to try to get their problems to God, to gain an audience with God. And here in chapter 5, it's even more striking to me that the man who comes to Elisha isn't even an Israelite. In fact, he's a Syrian, a country that didn't believe in Jehovah God. And here's Israel, they're supposed to be the testimony for Jehovah God in a foreign land, really. And yet, instead of them being a testimony, other people from other races are coming to Elisha to try to get help from God, to try to meet God. And the whole time, God is standing there with His own people, with open arms, ready to welcome them back. And they simply don't come back to God. I thought about this heavily this week and thought about that even if we can look around today here in Trinidad and we realize that even this nation here, the nation of Trinidad, even though there's countless religions here in Trinidad, that really few seek God, that few take their cares and their problems to God. You can read the newspaper and it seems like everybody blames the government for all their problems. And whether that's true or not, very few people take their problems to God. Very few people maintain a relationship with God that allows them to have daily walk with God, a daily time with God. So even as you get this new Bible reading schedule that will take us into the beginning of April, make time each day to spend time with God. Keep your communication with God open. Spend time each day talking to God, a time in prayer, a time reading His Word. Don't be like the people of Israel were, where they were so far removed from God that it seemed like they really had no idea of who to turn to when problems came. We'll look at even the king of Israel. When this Syrian comes to the king, he doesn't know where to turn. He doesn't know what to do because he's so far removed from taking problems to God, he literally has no idea what to do with this Syrian. He has no idea where to send him. He has no idea how to encourage him or how to give him advice. And yet, the king himself should have known what to do. The king himself should have been able to send that Syrian right to God, or at least known how to get a hold of God. And yet he didn't know, because they had been away from God so long. So here in 2 Kings chapter 5, we're going to talk about a Syrian man named Naaman. In fact, there's really a long list of characters in this story. There's a little Jewish servant girl who had been captured by the Syrians. There's the Syrian king. There's the king of Israel. There's the Syrian captain, Naaman. And it says that he's the captain of the guard. He was in charge, it seems like, of the king's bodyguard over Syria. It wasn't a small thing. He was in charge of security, or in charge of the closest men around the king of Syria. We also hear about Naaman's servants later on, Elisha himself later on in the story, and then Elisha's servant, Gehazi, here in this story. And last week, we talked about bringing our sorrows to God. The week before, we talked about bringing our burdens to God. Next week, we'll talk about bringing our fears even to God. But this week, I want to talk about bringing our pains to God. That we must give our pains to God. Now, that doesn't mean if you have someone who's a pain to you, that you take them to God. I'm talking about physical pains, sicknesses, illnesses, things that are like a physical problem that we have. But as I prepared for this sermon, I also realized that there are a lot of people today that look for healing from God, and they go about it the wrong way. So we need to be careful that we do it by biblical guidelines. You can look around today, and there's a lot of people, no one wants to suffer. But I want you to realize that we're all going to eventually die. And most of us, as we get ready to die, are going to go through a little bit of suffering in our life. Some amount of suffering. Even through something that's so joyous as giving birth to a child, there's suffering involved in that. There's pain involved in that. There's pain sometimes just daily life that we go through. And sometimes it's more than just the bumps and bruises of the life. And we're all going to eventually come to a time when we die if the rapture doesn't happen. And there are times that God chooses to heal us, but there's also times that instead of healing us, God chooses to use us as an example to other believers or as an example to lost people and helps us to deal with those illnesses or to deal with those injuries in our life. Ray Comfort, that man who was in the witnessing videos that we watched, I was listening to a sermon by him one time, and he said this. He said he was in a church service, and the man said that God doesn't want you to die sick. He doesn't want you to die sick. And Ray Comfort said this. He said, well, then how does God want you to die? Does He want you to die in a tragic car accident? Does He want you to die, you know, through gunshots? How does He want you to die? You know, we have to come to grips that eventually, because there's sin living in our life, that sin is eventually going to destroy our physical bodies. That we're eventually going to die. We're eventually going to have some kind of illnesses. And if you look around here in Trinidad, and I know in the States also, there are many pastors and churches that claim to use a healing ministry and that claim to offer healing services and things like that. Some of them do it to make money. Some of them do it to bring glory to themselves. And some may even try to do it with good intentions. But I want you to understand that oftentimes God doesn't heal us. That oftentimes God allows us to continue with the situations that we're in. And He uses those to glorify Himself. So whether God chooses to heal us, or whether God chooses to give us the strength that we need to endure the problems that we have, that the glory has to go to God. We can't sit there and say, you know, God, why are You doing this to me? Why are all these bad things happening to me? You know what? I just don't believe in God anymore. Or I don't believe in a God that can take care of me because He hasn't taken away my sickness. I've heard pastors say that a person wasn't healed because they didn't have faith. They didn't have enough faith to be healed. But I want you to understand that even that goes against the story that we see here, where that Naaman himself didn't want to do what Elisha told him to do. That he even turned away from what he was supposed to do and had to be encouraged to go and do what God wanted him to do. And I've also talked to people who, because they weren't healed the way they thought that God would heal them, that they've become discouraged because they think it's because of a lack of their own faith. And yet God is wanting to use us, even in our infirmities, even in our sicknesses, even in our pains in our life, God wants to use us to witness to others. That God wants to use us in the bad times that we're going through to be a strength to those around us. Probably the most or the best example of that in Scripture is Paul himself. And let me read this passage to you. Paul in 2 Corinthians talks about an illness that he has. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 5. He's talking about Jesus Christ and he says this, "Of such a one," talking of Jesus, "will I glory. Yet of myself I will not glory, but in mine infirmities. For though I would desire to glory, I shall not be a fool. For I will say the truth, but now I forbear, lest any man should think of me above that which he seeth me to be, or that he heareth of me. And lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me," and listen to this, "to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. For this thing," this pain or suffering that Paul had, "for this thing I besought the Lord three times, that it might depart from me." And listen to what the answer that Paul got from Jesus was. "And he said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness." Then Paul says this, "Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in mine infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me." Do you realize what Paul's saying? Paul's saying that, yes, sometimes life does bring problems. It does bring physical pain. It does bring sicknesses And sometimes it could be something that we'll carry in our bodies the rest of our lives. And it could be something from our past, maybe even from sin that we've been involved in our past. But I want you to understand that God gets glory out of our sicknesses. That God can get glory out of our problems that we have, the pains that we suffer. It's a matter of us that we have to give those pains over to God. We have to take those sicknesses to God. And yes, sometimes He does choose to heal us, but oftentimes He doesn't. And it may not be because we have a lack of faith. It may not be because of any problem that we're going through in our life. But He could simply put an infirmity into our life to make us a stronger witness for Him. That's what Paul believes there. And that's what we can even see demonstrated in the life of Job and other people in the Bible, that sometimes God puts things in our life so He can get the glory out of it. And that we should look at it as saying, hey, you know what I'm going to do with this? May not understand it. It may not be comfortable for me, but I'm going to allow God to get the glory of this out of my life. Regardless of whether He heals us or doesn't heal us. So here's Naaman. Look at 2 Kings chapter 5. All that to say, to start this out, but 2 Kings chapter 5. Let's read the first 9 verses. Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Assyria, was a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. Now that's an amazing statement to me. Because you realize what God has done with Naaman? You know who was over Syria? It was Israel. And yet God had worked through Naaman's life to give Syria deliverance from his own people, because they are in sin. So God has given deliverance to Syria. And so instead of Syria being under Israel, Syria is now over Israel through Naaman, this man. He was a general, a captain of some kind, a military man. And he had beaten Israel in some kind of battle, in some kind of situation. The Bible doesn't go into great detail, but Israel had been over Syria, and now Syria has deliverance from Israel. And now Syria is in charge or over parts of Israel because of what God has done in Naaman's life. Look at the end of verse 1. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. There was no cure for leprosy. Leprosy was a terrible disease. There's different kinds of leprosies, but the basic idea behind leprosy was that it kills your nervous system. And as it kills your nervous system, parts of your body lose their feeling, and they also lose their ability to heal themselves. And eventually you lose parts of your body as they just literally die and fall off. They lose their fingers, parts of your face, you know. And it's not that pretty of a disease. You can lose your nose, your lips, your ears, things like that. At the final stages of leprosy, you can no longer walk and things like that. Verse 2. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, a little girl. And she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, would God, my Lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy. Samaria was the capital of Israel. Jerusalem was the capital of Judea during this separated time. So here's this little girl. She's been taken as captive out of Israel. So she's really a slave girl. She's not there because she wants to be there. She's in a foreign land. She's working in a foreign household. They even spoke a different language than what the Israelites spoke. So maybe she's even had to adjust into a different language that she has to deal in. And really, this little girl, instead of taking all those situations and becoming bitter about it, I know if I had been in her situation, I'd be like, you know what? Can't wait till Naaman dies. You know, I would have been happy that he had leprosy. But this little girl, instead of being bitter about her situation, decides to be a missionary, really. She decides she's in a foreign land, in a foreign culture, having probably to learn even a foreign language, and she becomes a witness for God. Verse 4, she says that to her Naaman's wife, and one went in and told his lord, told Naaman, saying, thus and thus said the maid that is of the land of Israel. And verse 5, the king of Syria said, go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel. And he departed, and took with him 10 talents of silver, and 6,000 pieces of gold, and 10 changes of raiment. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how much money that would be. And think about this. It's somewhere between $1 million and $6 million Trinidad dollars. All right, that's a lot of money that Naaman has. Okay, so that's, you know, he's carrying all that to take to the king of Israel so he can be healed. Verse 6, and he, Naaman, brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, "Now when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman my servant to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy." That was an impossible thing to do. The king couldn't heal Naaman of his leprosy, the king of Israel. Verse 7, and it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man does send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me." Now, the king thought this. Here comes Naaman. He's a well-known general, a well-known leader of the Syrian army. They're our enemies. They've defeated us already in battle. And he's simply seeking an occasion to come and invade us again, or to come all the way to Samaria and put us under siege and to take our city because we can't fulfill the request that he's made. So since we can't fulfill this request, there's got to be some way that he is trying to make a fight. He's trying to start a fight with us. So with that in mind, verse 8, and it was so, when Elisha the man of God had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, "Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses, with his chariot, and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. First thing I want you to see in this story, look at this, and this could be almost a sermon in and of itself. But look at this, a child's witness. This little girl knew what Naaman needed more than the king of Israel did. You understand that? That the king of Israel was in charge of God's people. He'd been put in charge of really the chosen people of God. And yet the king himself didn't know what to do when Naaman came to him. And yet this little girl knew about Elisha. This little girl knew that Elisha had God's presence with him. That Elisha would be able to take Naaman and heal him. That God was the only one that could take care of Naaman. And yet this little girl knew more than the king of Israel. The king of Israel didn't know what to do. In fact, the king of Israel was afraid when Naaman came. He didn't know how to handle him. He didn't know what to do with the situation. In fact, it wasn't until Elisha sent to the king that the king was able to send this man to Elisha. The king never even thought about sending this man to Elisha. The king never even recognized that as a solution to his problem. He never realized that God was willing to solve this man's problem, willing to take care of this man's physical needs, and yet this little girl did. And here's the king in his palace. He has riches, he has food, he has garments, he has all of his wants and cares taken care of, and this little girl is a slave girl working in someone else's house in a foreign country. And yet that little girl hadn't forgotten about God's presence in her life. She hadn't forgotten where she could go to reach God, what she could do to send Naaman to God. That's a testimony for us that we need to not only not forget God in our lives, regardless of what's going on in our lives, but that we also need to make sure that we're pointing other people to God, that we're pointing those that are around us to the one that can take care of all their needs, to the one that loves them more than anybody else. I want you to listen to this statement. We never know what the impact of what we say is going to be on people around us. Think about that for a moment. That this little girl, she never talked to Naaman. She never went to the king of Syria. She never went to the king of Israel. She simply said it in her daily work, and someone overheard her and told Naaman what she had said. So here's this little girl. She just says something really to the side, or something, it seems like it wasn't even said to Naaman's wife, but she simply said something about God in her daily life. And I want you to understand that the things that we say in our life don't go unnoticed by those around us. That we can say something little and someone will pick up on that. But we need to be careful about what we say, but at the same time, we need to be a witness for God. We need to make sure as we live our life that we give God the glory for just the little things that God puts into our life. There's an old verse that was hung on the supply headquarters in London during World War II. That was the supply headquarters for the Anglo-American armies that were going back into France. That's a famous verse that says this, "For want of a nail, for want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For want of the horse, the rider was lost. For want of a rider, the battle was lost. For want of a battle, the kingdom was lost. And all for the want of a horseshoe nail." Something very little that caused a big effect at the end. I want you to understand that our words have deep impact on those around us. You may not think that your words have any impact at all, but I want you to understand, as we go through our daily life, give God praise for what's going on in your life. Remember to glorify God in what's going on. Even as you're at school, around friends, it may feel awkward. Those little things, those little words, don't go unnoticed. That little girl said something, she became a witness, and it ended up, two kings ended up having a conference over something that a little girl said as she worked and did chores around the house, as she was a slave in somebody else's house. And it ended up that God did a great work in someone's life simply because that little girl pointed someone in the right direction. So think about that. Don't take those little things for granted that you say. Next thing that I want you to look at, verses 9 through 13. Look at this. Look at this. A servant's wisdom. We've gone over this topic before, but God uses those what seem to be little things in our life, what seem to be the low things, what seem to be, you know, I would think that God would use the king of Israel in this situation, but that's not what God chose to use. So they come in verse 9. They come up to Elisha's house. Verse 9, "So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha." Now think about this. He has at least $1 million in Trinidad dollars with him. Anywhere from $1 million to about $6 million TT he's carrying with him in gold and silver and clothing. He's basically got a lot of money with him. He comes up to Elisha's house, and you know what Elisha does? Elisha doesn't come running out and go, "Wow, look at all this stuff." He doesn't even come out at all. He sends a messenger to go talk with him. He won't even come out to talk to him. Now, I have to admit that if someone came up with a really nice car and had loads of money in their car they wanted to give to me for me to help them, well, I probably would have gone out and at least talked to them. You know, "Hey, look, I may not be able to help you, but I'll try to refer you to somebody, you know, and just as a matter of referring them to somebody, you know, maybe you can send some of that cash to me." You know, but this guy had a lot of money. He's a famous person. He was well known through the land. A general of some type. And yet, Elisha doesn't go to him. He was really, I think, testing Naaman's character. He was testing whether Naaman was really trying to seek for a cure from him, or if Naaman wanted to have some kind of a prideful thing going on in his life. But look at verse 10. "And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, Go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean." That's the end of the message. Verse 11. "But Naaman was wroth and went away. He was angry and said, Behold, I thought, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper," or take away the leprosy. Verse 12. "Are not Abana and Pharpar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. And I want you to understand that what Naaman said is true. The Jordan River is usually a dirty, small river. Not a very significant river unless it's being flooded. It's usually very small. It can be walked across most of the time. It's sometimes a very dirty river. And sometimes right now we're going through our dry season. If you look at the river right down the road, it's really just a bunch of stagnant pools with a little trickle of water. That's probably what the Jordan River was like during this time. And the rivers that Naaman's talking about are fed by mountain springs and melted snow. And even to this day, those waters are like crystal clear waters. Even today, those two rivers are. So Naaman has a good point. But God was testing Naaman. So Naaman, angry, he goes away. And look at verse 13. His servants came near and spake unto him and said, My father, if the prophet had bid thee do some great thing, wouldst thou not have done it? How much rather then when he said to thee, Wash and be clean. And that struck a chord with Naaman. I think Naaman has the same problem many of us do when we come to God. Even for salvation. We want to work our way to heaven. We want to do great works to impress God with how we live our lives. And that's not really what God is interested in. God is interested in humility and obedience from us. And for Naaman to be healed, he had to humble himself and he had to obey what God had said for him to do. We can't get to heaven by our own works, no matter how good they are. We can't heal ourselves, so to speak, from our sin or anything else that's going on in our life. But we have to go to God humbly and we have to obey what He tells us to do. Naaman does that. Verse 14, he went down, dipped himself 7 times in Jordan according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Naaman was healed. And really, this servant's wisdom, the servant realized that what Naaman needed in his life, what he had to humble himself and to obey. You know, that's the same thing that I said that we need to have in our life. Humility and obedience for God to work in our life. And finally, the last thing, look at God's power. God does heal Naaman. Naaman comes back to Elisha's house and he has all that money. Lots and lots of money. And yet, he offers all that to Elisha. And Elisha says, I don't want any of your money. This isn't a time for me to receive your money. And I want you to understand that that's a good principle for us to have today. If you see a pastor on television, he says, send me money and I'll send you something that'll heal you. Don't trust in those kinds of ministries. Don't trust in those kind of men. That God doesn't allow people to get healed for financial gain of someone. He doesn't allow it to have glory given to man. That when God heals somebody, it's so He Himself can get the glory. So that He Himself can be lifted up. Not some man, not some ministry, not a church name. That God does it to glorify Himself. So if you ever see a ministry on TV or involved in a ministry where the glory is going to a pastor or a preacher or to a man, and for him healing that person, I want you to understand that that's not from the Word of God. That's not how the Word of God says it should be. That the glory has to go to God. Elisha tells that to Naaman. This made a great change in Naaman's life. And at the end of Naaman's dealing with Elisha, he even asks and says, Look, when I go back to my homeland in Syria, that I go in with the king of Syria, and we kneel in front of these pagan gods, and I help my king walk into the temple, these pagan temples, and I help him kneel down. It seems like out of the passage this king was maybe older and that he was actually physically helping this man into the temple. And Elisha says this, he gives him dirt out of the land of Israel that he can kneel in that dirt and thereby not be bowing down to foreign gods. I don't understand how all that works, but somehow it made a change in Naaman's life. That Naaman wanted to make sure that he wasn't worshiping other gods in his life. That he wasn't worshiping other things going on in his life. He was only going to be worshiping the true God. And then at the end of the chapter, there's one interesting last story here. There is a servant for Elisha. And this also shows God's power. This servant had seen all that money that Naaman had, those changes of clothes. And he wanted some of it for himself. And out of his own greediness, he follows after Naaman. And he asks Naaman, as Naaman sees him following, he asks Naaman for some of that money. He makes up a story in verse 22, how that two young men have come to stay with Elisha, and that Elisha wants money to give to them, and 2 changes of clothes. So Naaman does that. Naaman gives him 2 talents of silver. He gives him 2 changes of garments in verse 23. And so this servant of Elisha, his name's Gehazi, takes those things and goes back and hides them where Elisha's staying. at Elisha's house. And Elisha asks him when he comes in, says, "Where have you been?" And Gehazi goes, "Well, you know, I haven't been really anywhere, just walking around." And Elisha goes, "Didn't my heart go with you as you chased him down? Didn't my heart go with you as he stopped and gave those things to you?" And what happened to Gehazi, verse 27, "The leprosy thereof, therefore, of Naaman, shall cleave unto thee and unto thy seed forever." And he went out from his presence a leper as white as snow. So Gehazi got leprosy because he tried to seek for financial gain at a time when God was trying to receive the glory for those things that had gone on. We need to be careful as we take away glory from God. We need to make sure that we take our pains and take our sicknesses to God. But we also need to make sure that we understand how that God sometimes chooses not to heal us. How that sometimes God gets glory as we struggle through our life with those infirmities. And God gets glory by giving us the strength that we need.